another episode of Tennessee Forward Reading. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. I am leaning into my Twitter handle, and my focus is to basically, you know, merge all of my social media handles. I get to publish on Medium. I have my personal website through where I self-publish my book, as well as WordPress, etc. But this is cool. I get to basically tell, there has to be a way to basically merge all of those things. I have another channel which is coming together as far as space travel and Star Trek. You can actually look at that. It's called Over 40 Unapologetically Nerdy. But this channel is going to be dedicated to reading. And I can do it in a different way. There are a whole bunch of podcasts that are dedicated to art and reading. So here you go. This is mine. What I'm watching is Between the World and Me, or I want to watch that. This is a docu series based on Ta-Nehisi Coates' book that it's an extensive letter that he wrote to his teenage son. What I'm reading, and I'll read to you my views on section 2 of Ibram X. Kendi's book Stamped. What I'm eating and drinking, I went off on Blue Apron because they were getting on my damn nerves, and what I'm actually cooking for Sunday dinner for myself, my additions to Chatterbooks, and that's about it. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for listening and coming back every single week. As my Twitter handle reflects, I watch a lot of TV, and this past week, or the previous week, has not been any exception. I do a full podcast on all things NASA, as well as Star Trek Discovery, and many things Star Trek. I've posted or submitted several pitches now for ideas for articles or even essays. And I'm planning on taking my week off, since I'm not going to be traveling, as a writing week, to be able to, although they have not approved those articles, I'm taking it seriously that I'm going to go ahead and write those articles on my own, possibly post in the wiki, Star Trek fans fiction wiki, or just on my own blogs. So with that said, there are a couple of shows that are going to be published or are premiering in the next couple of weeks. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom with Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman, may rest in peace, is supposed to premiere in just a week or so, I believe. But also, Between the World and Me, the film version of Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, that actually was just an extended letter that he wrote at the time to his teenage son. I think it looks like it's going to be good. I saw the write-up in it in this past week's New York Times, as well as my local paper, and I was actually impressed by the cast. I was also impressed the challenges that they actually shot, because it was basically shot all during the pandemic. The way that they were able to do it, one of the scenes was actually near where Amy Cooper was basically erroneously alleged attack by the black bird watcher, Harvard grad bird watcher, in Central Park. How they actually had, where people, they could not block the walkway, but at the same time, the people were, instead of going around and giving them their space, they made it a point to basically walk through, and it's not like, and not give way, and they were all white. I find that revolting, but there it is. So, and they made a point of printing that in the New York Times. I'm glad they did, because it shows right in the area where that took place, where people are just so still very callous and just irreverent, and they really don't they won't admit, but they're just so privileged, and they don't respect other people's space or other people's right to exist, because in their moment of selfishness, they're like, I'm the only one, I'm going to walk, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to respect anybody else's space. I think that is the entire point. That is the entire point of the shooting and the comments. It's one of those shows that is going to premiere. Let me see if I can pull that up right quick. When is that going to premiere? I think it's another testament to the fallacy of white privilege, the issue with a majority of white park goers not respecting especially this entire black cast, and they could tell that they were shooting, but they were just disrespectful and trying not respecting that the shooting and trying to get, and walking through the scenes irrespective of it. Just stupid. Some people just make you want to punch them in the neck just because they don't listen, right? So, between the world and me premiere. And I'm going to need all these this pictures anyways. Oh, it's going to be on HBO Max, and it actually premiered this weekend. I have HBO through my Amazon account, but I'm wondering if I actually I actually have access to HBO Max, or if it's going to be all streamed across all of those platforms. But definitely that is a show to watch, and I'm going to probably be watching and commenting on that today. I was also shocked by ABC's Life. This particular show is about this show is actually on ABC. It comes on Wednesday, and it's inspired by the real life of Isaac Wright Jr. It's a serialized legal and family drama about Aaron Wallace, who becomes a lawyer litigating cases for other inmates while fighting to overturn his own life sentence for a crime he didn't commit. It puts on blast the sitting Attorney General of New York, incoming, because the sitting one is supposed to be retiring, and the heir apparent was complicit in Aaron Wallace's conviction. Little problem was they did it all completely illegally. They did it off of the wink wink of a prominent black billionaire's whose child basically overdosed in Aaron Wallace's club. And it was basically a setup. The black father tapped his friend, then the DA of the Bronx, to basically go after and not only shut down the club, but convict Aaron as a big drug dealing kingpin to get back for the overdose of the daughter. A lot of the information, the overall, the it was overkill, because, and they did it just so slick. They did it just to basically, how dare you? Number one, how dare you have this club? But how dare you get in my way? And you, we gonna block it and do everything necessary to not, for you not to get your freedom or have your freedom. We're gonna tear up your family, leave your daughter out there unprotected, just so you can't be successful. That's what it all came down to. And it's also a crab mentality, because it wasn't shocked after all the reading that I'm doing with Ibram X. Kendi's and the aftermath and assimilators. It doesn't shock me that another black man actually uses the white. This is some Illuminati shit, I know, but it really should not shock us that another black man is willing to sell out another brother to basically protect his own family, basically playing into the white supremacist narrative, and to keep us all in check, you know, make sure we police our own, and we will also, I'm kind of going off on the whole Illuminati, but it really should not shock us about people, who people are willing to cape for. Billions of dollars don't make you free. They just make you, they'll tolerate you as long as you have the money. But don't get it twisted. When it comes right down to it, they would, and the your money assures the, for them to get their others' attention, but it's not going to assure you a consistent and a safe place in their world. W.E.B. Du Bois and a lot of other rich intellectuals have found that out. Even Tyler Perry to tell them he doesn't really want, he didn't really care about getting a seat at the table, because it's even halfway getting a seat at the table doesn't assure you access. So he just built his own table. Hats off to that brother. But this is, but in this particular narrative, it doesn't shock me that another one assimilator would roll over on another brown person to get back at them and to deny them their freedom. That to me, it's absolutely deplorable. And in spite of all of that, what this character, the main character of this particular show, he basically not only gets his law degree by correspondence course, that's cool. He uses the law as a loophole to actually take the bar. He also uses the law to have them administer the bar exam in his, at his prison, which pisses off a whole bunch of white racists. How dare you bend the, use the law legally to get what you actually need? That scene basically tripped me out. But he did. And he used it effectively, because he sat for the bar, passed it, and then started representing the other inmates successfully. One blew up in his face, but then every other trial and every other victims or rights, he actually, he was absolutely actually able to set the scales right. And he used the law effectively to do that. Many bumps along the way, appearance by 50 Cent, who I honestly, some of his music is okay. I did watch Power for a minute. But some of the things and his some of the things he has said has been completely problematic. His support for the Republican regime is based on revenue and finance. It has nothing to do with what is right. And I have personally, I have a problem with that. But his attachment to this show, his co-starring in a couple of the episodes, and he basically did get one of the other inmates turned on him and tried to kill him, stabbed him in the neck and in the chest, attacked him, which I think was completely the coolest thing because his character needed to go. I hate characters that are just so bad who only had credibility in jail. And that was the other thing. Some of the former cast members of The Wire, a little bit more gray, a little bit older, but they are in, they play inmates in this particular drama, which was funny because I thought their Brooklyn and New York accents in The Wire, because The Wire was actually in Baltimore, now actually is applicable here in a jail in upstate New York. I find that wonderful. But what I was trying to say is that even though what 50 Cent and his stance of support of the Republican and conservative government has more to do with not getting taxes and et cetera, I think his involvement with this particular show can give him a potential, is a potential positive. And it is going to make money because it is well written. And that goes to the staff, the other staff, Hank Steinberg and the other writers, the creator and writers of this show. So with that said, that's another, if you haven't had time, it's going into the second season. It comes on Wednesday at 10 o'clock on ABC. It's worth a binge watch because that's what I all did when I wasn't asleep on Sunday, watching your first season. Aaron gets out at the last episode, the end of last season. This season, actually, no. He gets his case, he gets the retrial, and then he gets let go, is the first episode of this season. So what is he going to do now? And his wife comes to pick him up. What is going to happen going forward? Because when you piss off high-ranking white people, and that's what actually happened. The heir apparent to the attorney general had to withdraw from the race. That means the Masterson, her character, she is now running uncontested. But the warden, the female warden of that particular prison, was actually replaced by the guy that basically threatened Aaron and actually was illegally taping them. So those are two shows that are worth a watch, both Between the World and I, as well as Life. And I'm also looking forward to, just because I am, not only have I had a very good week of TV watching, but also there's upcoming watching TV in the upcoming weeks. I added this as not necessarily as an afterthought because I was listening to another one of my favorite podcasts, Ratchet and Respectable by Demetria Lucas. And not only did she mention this, but also Chriselle and Kid Fury on the Read podcast also mentioned this as well. The reunion episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I had no idea that this show has almost been off the air for almost 30 years. It was groundbreaking. It was probably one of those shows that is such a part of our TV psyche that we had no idea. But why wouldn't we? Why? There was only two other shows on basically at the same time. I think the Cosby Show was on. And what was the third show? 1991. I have no idea. But I think that show in particular and just the nuances of the show and what they spoke about was just absolutely amazing. What cracked me up is Mike Lowry was all grown up. Everybody was a little bit older, had a little bit more gray, a little bit more round. Ashley, you know, all grown up. She's very flower child, California, but that's neither here nor there. The original house that the set is based off of is actually available to rent on VRBO and Airbnb. Jazz seems finer to me. I mean, black dudes are just like fine wine. They age better with age. He looks better than the dorkiness of it all back in the day. Carlton has not changed, and he still can do the Carlton. The Aunt Viv 2 has not aged well, but then again, fair-skinned women, fair-skinned people usually don't, just saying. However, the original Aunt Viv, where the standard was set, Janet Hubert, is absolutely stunning at her age. I think she's almost 70 years old, still beautiful. And it was great not only seeing her and Will bury the hatchet, literally, but we were actually let in on some things that nobody else knew. How after, I think a lot of what she was going through had not only to do with postpartum depression, because she was pregnant. She actually had an infant on at that particular time. And now that I think about it, that child is almost in their mid-30s right now. But at the same time, she was in an abusive relationship. And nobody on that show knew it. And she basically was like most women, how could you not know that I was actually in pain when, like, why didn't you read my mind and you couldn't suss out the reason that I'm acting this foolishness is because I was in so much pain and I was going through so much shit. She put a lot of, and it was both ways. She put so much on that cast to basically read her mind, and they're not mind readers. But Will was just like every other dude. He was like, now I recognize your pain. I'm so sorry that I was complicit in it and I didn't read your mind, but I'm so sorry. And can we move on and let's grow together? 27 years it took them both to mature enough to get to this point. It was just such a kumbaya a moment, but it wasn't really, I didn't think it, no shade. I didn't think it was fake at all. I think it was well past due. And it was obvious if you look at how she reacted to it all, what she revealed to Will and the rest of the cast, it just really made sense. And it was just a wonderful tear-jerking moment, how all of them, the social construct of a family was created, and these people from very different parts of the country, desperate backgrounds, different training, but they were the quintessential family and they really obviously loved each other. One of the other things that struck me is everyone that wasn't there, and the death of James Avery in 2013 is still present, and it was obvious that every last one of those cast members felt some kind of way about his presence or lack thereof and what he brought to the show, how he challenged them to be better at their craft and to explore other craft, different forms of music, different, and just digging deeper to be better at what they were doing and not to take it all for granted. All of them reacting to their audition tapes, as well as how they interacted and the chemistry they had on the show, still carry on 3 decades later to this, to actually the reunion show. But knowing that they still interact with each other even without this reunion show. That's the one thing that was struck me. It is obvious that these people still had, even with the exception of the Janet Hubert character, it is still that they still all have a connection and they still have a relationship outside of the show, in spite of the show, even before the reunion. It's like they actually are family and they still are friends and probably closer than most actually families. Because I don't think I'm as close to, with the exception of my aunt and my cousin, I don't think I'm as close to my family as these people seem to be on this show. And it's a great watch. So if I can add anything to any other show that you definitely need to watch, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and I, that dropped also on HBO Max on the 20th, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and especially this show. In addition to the other Thanksgiving Day shows like Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving. Those are the types of things you actually have to watch just to mix it up a little bit. This show actually will, you will actually need at least the trial to HBO Max. I got it through my Apple account. But it's definitely worth the subscription. There's a lot of content that's coming up that's being streamed exclusively on HBO Max. So it's a great thing that you may want to consider not only doing the trial subscription, but consider a month-to-month subscription through that service. Dear Blue Apron, y'all making my head hurt. I have been a customer since last year, 2019, or early part of 2019, when I decided that I was going to test several different food services and write them up. And what I found is all of you guys are about the same, but you're the one that I stayed with the longest for a variety of reasons, one of which being wine selections. But that only works if you live in a state that allows you to ship. What I've also noticed is the amount of chicken, and I'm not really a big chicken eater. I do prefer seafood and pork. And then I noticed that a lot of your recipes are very labor-intensive, requiring the tools to zest lemons and grate shit and cut shit, and everything has capers in it. That's my number one beef. Every dish doesn't need capers. You don't cook collard greens with apple cider vinegar. Stop it. I'm tired. For example, the recipes this week with prosciutto and rice and, oh no, I got that backwards. Prosciutto and what looks like rigatoni noodles and chorizo meatballs over pepper rice is dumb. The prosciutto went well with my egg white only omelet. The meatballs went great over the noodles. And I'm braising beef ribs right now to go over the pepper rice. Y'all is a bunch of foolishness. I don't know where you get these chefs from. They need to go sit down somewhere because their combinations make no sense. They need to leave capers out of their recipes. I'm tired. If I got an order from you but got to rewrite your recipes and pair up shit myself, why do I have you as a service? And that's another complaint. You should make it easy to completely cancel the service on the app. I don't think I need to talk to anyone up at the Blue Apron about why I don't need your services anymore. You're getting on my nerves. Again, annoyed, frustrated and cranky customer, Tim Fro, Chattanooga, Tennessee. So what's going on with me and Thanksgiving and this week? Of course, I have a new toy. I received my MacBook Air just today, in fact. And I've already started using it. I have not bought or had access to a MacBook Air since like 2005, 2006. That one, I basically skipped across the floor because I'm a klutz. First, when I was in Hawaii for the first time, and I was somewhere else, and it just went flying across the floor. But I'm getting back into the habit of having this beautiful piece of technology, Marvel. I'll basically do an update on my tech corner on my other over 40 and unapologetically nerdy episode. But this particular episode, I wanted to take this opportunity to basically relate to the audience my reflections that while Thanksgiving is coming up. I accepted a delivery not only of my MacBook Air today, but I also accepted a delivery from Crate and Barrel. I needed a steamer pot for the crab legs I'm about to have. I am having caviar as well as raw oysters. Fuck what you heard. I know I'm bougie and I don't care. And I'm actually going to put together a non-traditional celebration, especially in the time of COVID. And that's where I'm going to start this. My reflections, actually, in the time of COVID, ending with the K, not with the D. That's not a misspelling if you understand language, and all the black folks, they have a way to emphasize the seriousness of a disaster or a storm or illness. They tend to subtly change the endings of words or conjugating non-verbs, i.e. COVID. Not COVID, but COVID. And this is where I start with the dedication to my Aunt Melody Brown, a.k.a. Vern, my mother's sister, who was her best friend, and her husband, my Uncle Milton Brown. If we had listened to them, the hell? If we had listened to them and listened to them consistently months ago, we would have known and believed the seriousness of this drama. We would have stayed our asses at home, sat down somewhere, and we would have control of this plague. But only those foolhardy MAGA fools, those foolhardy dumbass MAGA fools, allowed this thing to prolong itself for 8 to 9 months later. But I digress. Financial crises, social unrest, political chaos. We seem to be in the end of times indeed. But in spite of all of this, maybe because of all this, I have been particularly reflective to this run-up to Thanksgiving Day. I am sheltering in a place where people leave me the hell alone. It's safe, it's clean, it's beautiful in the Tennessee Valley. Big ups to Adrienne, the ultimate landlady. And did I say I'm allowed to safely shelter in place in the north side of Tennessee? And I love it because people leave me the hell alone. The world we are in, we're united. That's hermits, that is. We are fine with a prolonged, self-continued, prolonged lockdown. We never emerge from it in March. And we really have an issue with everyone else bursting at the seams to go to crowded locations, breathing the same contaminated air, touching the same contaminated surface as the rest of y'all. We're solid. We're good. Solitude allows you to be creative. Why don't y'all just try it sometime? I'm particularly thankful for so many things in this season. Don't get me wrong, 2020 has sucked a big one. But in spite of it all, because of it all, I'm seriously counting my blessings. And I'm counting them, and this is not an all-inclusive list. I voted in person and did it proudly. I sold 2 homes, and I'm exploring purchasing my next one right here in Tennessee. Did I mention I love living in the north side of Chattanooga? I have this coolest truck on the planet, a Ford F-150 Lariat. Baby, baby! I get to dream about next year. Meg Thee Stallion's new album is the bomb diddly. The sun is shining. I get to feast on the written word. I know, I love books, and I love to read, so there you go. I get to have that unconventional Thanksgiving right in my own house. No, I'm not having a turkey. I get to have seafood because I'm buying it, and I live alone, so there you go. I'm allowed to be a Trek nerd and techno nerd because people leave me the hell alone, and I work, and I got disposable income, so there you go. I have the audacity to make a list of my blessings. I mean, how crazy is that? I get to write every single day just because I want to. We're into the fall season, and I particularly love watching the change of the season from my window. All the brilliant colors of the leaves, the reds as the sun sets with highlights of pink at dusk. Dusk and dawn are beautiful here in the Tennessee Valley. I have access to beautiful fresh flowers every single day. There is a service that delivers booze called Dinner Delivered to my door, OMG. I no longer have any mortgages. This is the second year I have not had to do contract medical work, and I have more money saved than ever. I am far below the 6% credit utilization, so go figure. God still is alive and protects me. I am who I am, and everything that I've accomplished is due to the will of God. I am nothing without Him. If I ever were to forget that, I know that all of this would be smoke, gone in a second. And I invite the listening audience to add to this list. Tell me what you are thankful for. Drop me a line at TennesseeFroWasReading@gmail.com or drop me a line in the comment section wherever you listen to this podcast. I was invited to join a woke kind of book club through the suggestion of a friend of mine, J.B. Smooth, Janelle Buchanan from Virginia. And the book that's on the reading list for the upcoming month is Stamped by Ibram X. Kendi. This past week, I have been a blogging kind of fool, and I wrote my response to section 2 of that book. The book is separated chronologically by decades. This particular section is from 1743 to 1846. And this is my response that I wanted to share with you. This is all in my Dale's Angels Inc.blog that you can actually access through WordPress. But I also posted it at FeliciaBaxter.com and on my Medium Felicia Baxter page. But here we go. I am who I am. Black, cisgender, heterosexual. I work hard and I read to relax. This is how I see myself, and I really could care less how others perceive me. These are the things I don't want to change about me, but I'm willing to accept and pivot to accept and respect other choices or pronouns. I'm learning and putting into context words tossed around by the ultra woke and the real stupid social construct, simply meaning or notion adopted by society with respect to how society with respect to how they view or deal with an event. Society's perception of what society is and other triggering words like gender, sexual preference, family, with weaponization of tools like racism, homophobia, transphobia, sexism, classism to preserve at all costs the conservative and faulty construct of those before mentioned notions. These isms breed fear and mistrust and allows people to do whatever necessary to preserve the faulty construct, to the point they will lie to themselves about there not being a pandemic or what a race and continent, Africa or the indigenous tribes of North and South America or our Jewish brothers and sisters deserve not to exist. And we can force them to work, steal their riches, steal their lands, and we justify it by racial superiority or to preserve whatever status quo. The founding fathers of America did us a disservice. They were building a society, a country, and had every opportunity to right the deeply wrong and racist paternalistic attitudes of Western Europe. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. If they could have looked past their long skinny noses to realize that this could have read all of us are created equal. No one has the right to subjugate forced labor, can be educated to make an informed decision, but none of them had the balls to use the time and advanced thought of the Enlightenment to take this decisive step. Why break away from England and establish a government that's just as restricted and corrupt as England or any other Western European monarchies of the time? In Stamped, I realized they played us all. The Revolutionary War was fought primarily so we could have the benefit of the financial wealth and not have to share it with any other government. We won't be made to fight any wars outside of borders, nor send our tax revenues to far places to fight more wars. The economy of our country at the time, noted 1643 to 1846, was agrarian dependent on forced slave labor. England and other governments had outlawed the slave trade and was abolishing slavery across the continent and clear present threat to the economy of the young American colonies. The words of equality and freedom written into our Declaration of Independence invalidated every contrary ism to freedom. The founding fathers brought social unrest and other dissidents on all of us if they had been clear and true in the intent of the words. The Royal Society of England, KKK, Illuminati, all the same. These secret societies for rich white men, smart in some respect, moronic and violent in others, but with the same purpose to support white supremacy. 130 years apart, yes, more numbers, but the Royal Society of 1743 and the establishment of the KKK after the Civil War are about the same. Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson are walking contradictions. T.J. Penn, the Declaration of Independence, owning hundreds of black slaves and chilling with Sally Hemings. He wanted to think of enlightened ideology and hang out writing philosophical treatises at Monticello, but he had bills to pay and had expensive French tastes for food and art. Yes, he was greatly in debt and needed his slaves to work off those notes. His nonsense was accepted easier than another contemporary, Phyllis Wheatley, ex-slave, fluent in Greek and Latin, and a better writer than he, but no one would publish her in this country. TJ would go on to make amends and compromise, the Three-Fifths Compromise, three black slaves for one white man, and the Missouri Compromise to stave off the inevitable. There is no compromise for crazy. You can't enslave other human beings, point blank, period. They tried and failed. But white supremacists try ingenuous. They flip the script and develop sharecropping, tying generations to the land they don't own and poverty for years. They pass Jim Crow laws, stripping all non-whites to generation of servitude and poverty. They can pass sweeping crime legislation every century, leading to mass incarceration, where large prison plantations like Angola in Louisiana and Parchment in Mississippi operate with impunity. No oversight, no recourse but to serve lengthy prison sentences for stupid infractions. Why should I cape? Always pick the progressive anti-racist over 50 assimilations, i.e. Cameron in Kentucky and Tim Scott are assimilationists, and I have no time for them. Two slaves trying to please Massa in Virginia sold out the Prossers, who would have led a revolt, possibly ending slavery in the colonies. But fair warning to the progressives, I'm still learning every single day, and I will not be culturally shamed. Don't try to punk me on my own history when your lying-ass ancestors rewrote everything and wouldn't let me learn. That will get your throat punched every single time. I'm old, I'm cranky, and I have no patience. I will support anyone who wants to be on the right side of history. I don't support liars, bullies, and dumbasses. I just can't. Knowing yourself is knowing your history. Africans are not savages. Having religion other than Christianity does not make you a savage. Being poor does not make you a savage. If your belief that those that look and act differently than you has to be an error, then you are a racist. And you have to work to do. And you have work to do. Because your racist belief and your whole social construct based on these narrow conservative racist views are wrong and will stunt your ability to evolve and for all of us to grow together. Racism deniers also have no place in this discussion because racism and every other ism is so pervasive in our society. It is like these fools admit to the existence of racism. If the existence of racism, society will fall apart. No. But you will be on blast to do something about it. So, the ball is in your court. What's next? So, on to my favorite part of the show and why I created the podcast. So, I have made multiple editions to Chatterbooks. As soon as I... And I, the reason and how I usually base what I usually add to Chatterbooks is based on what I find in the book section of either the LA Times, Free Press here in Tennessee, as well as the Book Review in Chattanooga. Well, it seems the pickings were slim this week. In the Times Book Review, I only added a couple of the suggestions. One of them, it appears it's going to be a great illustrated book, a little bit dystopian, and I'm not as interested in those types of books, but I added this to the children or the young adult section. It's called Cleo Porter and the Body Electric by Jake Burke. It's about a 12-year-old Cleo Porter who lives in an outlandish future dystopia with a mysterious virus that swept through the earth, forcing society in what is known as the Great Separation. Kind of sounds like now. Families isolate themselves in their apartments, try to proceed with the semblance of ordinary life via food delivery and virtual technology. Oh, wait. So this is not too far-fetched in the future, but I think it'll make a great read for your young adult or older teenager. And then I did see where there was a couple of biographies on Abraham Lincoln that's making its way up the charts. As well as, there's one book about the skin trade, about books made of human skin. Again, not too interested in that. The Dead Are Rising, The Life of Malcolm X. This was, I had spoke about this on last week's podcast, but Abraham Lincoln in his times, as a cultural biography, there's more and more on the actual life about Abe Lincoln and the Grand Ole Party that is contrary to what we actually think about him as a great American. He was a great American president, but he was also had his contradictions, and he was strictly Republican, meaning he freed the slaves from an economic standpoint because white men needed jobs. That's that's the only reason why he freed them, because he knew we had to be free to protect white men's jobs, but he didn't think we were equal. And that is apparent in his many of his writings leading up to his death.
That learns as you get stronger.
Also, I made several additions to For Us, By Us. I added Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I spoke about that at the top of the show because that released the scenographic or the video of that actually just released on HBO Max this week. I made additions to the historical fiction section. Philippa Gregory plays heavily. The White Queen, The Other Boleyn Girl, The Kingmaker's Daughter, and The Red Queen. I also added,
what are you supposed to do with this?
They hydrate your
a lips. Book on leadership, Lead From Inside by Stacey Abrams, part biography and her travails in her stellar career. I added several books to Southern literature. J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy, is being released, I think, in the upcoming weeks on Netflix. That's probably going to be a great book. It's a memoir of family and culture in crisis. I think he's originally from Kentucky or Ohio. There's a couple of books I added from Rick Bragg, Where I Come From, Stories from the Deep South, and The Best Cook in the World, Tales from My Mama's Southern Kitchen, also by Rick Bragg. If she actually adds apple cider vinegar to greens, we're going to fight. And then there's Charles Dodd White's book, How Fire Runs. This I want to read, and I'm probably going to end up buying this book. In the opening pages of this writer from Knoxville, a group of white supremacists established themselves on the grounds of an abandoned mental hospital. From here, on wooded outskirts of a carefully selected town in East Tennessee, their leader intends to rebrand the movement by offering the locals some kinder, gentler Nazis. Cool-headed, civically useful, rhetorically skillful. They call their stronghold Little Europe. This is so scarily close to the truth. It's almost frightening, but I think it's going to be a good read. And I'm going to make sure that everybody knows about it, because this guy lives right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Also, just when I thought there was nothing, it seems like when the pickings are slim from a Times Book Review, as well as from the other nationally papers that I actually read, there's a whole Humanities Tennessee website where I can actually find other Southern authors that I want to add to my forever growing library. So just because it's not in the New York Times Book Review, doesn't mean there are no good books to be read. That's just northern kind of bougie quirk that I need to get over, because there are many books, as I can have found, that have been reviewed by the Tennessee Humanities. So there you go. And last but not least, there was an author that I heard about this morning on CBS News called Viet Thanh Nguyen. He basically has written a number of books about his experience as a Vietnamese refugee. And what I have attempted to do in the last few minutes is add two of his books to the For Us, By Us section of Chatterbooks, because as a fellow brown person, he's in a unique position to relate his own and his family's struggle for acceptance, and he best exemplifies what it really means to be an American in this country. Both of his books, The Refugees, which was released in 2018, and then The Sympathizer, which was actually, it looks like this was actually released in 2016. He actually has another book that's supposed to be coming out in March of 2021 that they are taking pre-orders for now. Chicken of the Sea, which I'm actually thinking that it seems like it's a children's book, but also of the harrowing crossing of the Vietnamese overseas, as well as displaced. He has basically a fund of amazing books about the refugee experience, and I think all of them would be a great addition to any library. And that's where I'm going to end it. Great books, great TV shows, and good eats. That's what it's all about on this episode of Tennessee Froward's Reading. And it was just great being able to produce this for you. Again, please drop me a line about suggestions for a Thanksgiving playlist. These are like some of the songs I'm going to be actually publishing on Spotify. And I'll actually have the link to my playlist, Thanksgiving playlist, in the notes. Also, give me suggestions on what you guys are going to be eating over the holidays, as well if you're going to be eating alone, and suggestions about what I should be adding to my seafood feast. If your comments for this episode and previous episodes are not too trolly, I encourage you to navigate to TennesseeFroward@gmail.com. Drop me a line. I may read it on air if it's not too trolly, or wherever you listen to this podcast. I think it's all very amazing that I get the opportunity to do this. But there's still people that I wish would just eat a bag of dicks, or just need a big old glitter bomb. Navigate to shipabagofdicks.com/tenfrogotjokes. If you agree and you need to send somebody anonymously a bag of gummy penises. And as always, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating. And until next time, have a great night.